Hello and welcome to Real Geeks Presents the B-Roll. I am Crash and Burn. With me as always is Mike Montgomery. Is it hot enough for you, Mike?
Oh, frankly, yes. So I figure give it a few days and it's going to get far worse than my lungs can possibly handle.
I can't wait.
Yeah, especially when my inhaler is on about the last 5 doses, my prescriptions have expired, and yeah, there's like a whole other headache just with that.
Ah, so everything's just coming up Milhouse. That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm sure it's not going worse for other people in the world of entertainment. Surely not.
Actually, I feel like even just this first one filed under, this is just funny to me. Now, this is a story from a few weeks back, but with CinemaCon and everything, this episode is pretty much a just fire sale of all the stories that we haven't otherwise been able to get to. Just because I've been dying to say these words for 2 or 3 weeks now, John Oliver blackmails Congress with their own digital data.
How delightful.
It's on the one hand, it's inspired, but on the other hand, it's kind of sad and pitiful that this is what you have to do to get government to, like, move on things. What happened was that last week tonight, a few weeks ago, did an episode on data brokers, how they can get all your information, how it's sold, what they do with it, so on and so forth, and how all of this is both, frankly, terrifying and entirely legal. Because this is last week tonight, and of course they did, they then proceeded to hire their own data broker, mined data for web addresses around Congress, figured out who these web addresses belong to, and basically said, we're going to release all your search histories if you don't make it illegal for us to do so.
I mean, okay, yeah, no, that's smart, that's clever. That's how you get shit done, apparently.
Exactly. It's beautiful, and like I said earlier, you shouldn't have to do this, but the simple fact is, we know good and goddamn well there are members of Congress who really, really don't want those search histories coming out.
Yeah, we also know damn well that there are many members of Congress who wouldn't lift a finger to put their own mother out if they were on fire. And quite frankly, I'm surprised, and I'm going to assume that they did the right thing to cover their own asses, of course, and pass this law.
Oh, yeah, like one would hope.
One would hope.
It hasn't happened yet, or at least I haven't seen any news of it happening yet, because... Also, let's be honest, even if they were going to move on it, have you ever seen government move on anything quickly, ever?
To cover their own ass? Exclusively, yes.
As of yet, as far as I know, they haven't done anything. But one would think, and this could also just be one fun story to follow up on.
Release the data, John Oliver. Release the data. I want to know. Just do it. Just do it. You know it'll be fun. Come on. Come on, do it already.
And just imagining the damage that could be done. I know I'm petty, but it just makes my heart happy. Next up, we're going to go into music for about 30 seconds or so. Specifically, a story of a Metallica concert in Brazil where a fan gave birth during the show. And the main thing that I thoroughly enjoyed here is she gave birth as they were closing out the night with Enter Sandman.
Delightful.
The opening lyrics for Enter Sandman. The thought of someone giving birth to "Say your prayers, little one, don't forget my son to include everyone." And I believe it, in fact, was a boy.
I hope they name him Napster.
Unfortunately, the baby boy, Lewin, was born at 11:15 p.m. to the sound of Enter Sandman, according to the mother, who entered labor three songs before the show was set to end.
I'm happy that they're good and safe and everything worked out okay. Just maybe you could have skipped that show. It's only Metallica. It's only Metallica.
This could also be the equivalent of the time that I went to a Metallica concert where I was kind of going, I've always wanted to go. This is going to be the one and only time they're ever in Halifax.
Yeah. Yeah, how'd that work out?
Oh, it was actually a great show.
I'm sure. And the other one was a great show, too. I'm sure.
Yeah.
And the next one will be a great show, too. I'm sure.
The article says the birthing process had probably started right around the same time the encore did. Meaning it would have started with Metallica's Battery. So you're going into labor to old school, hard driving Metallica and giving birth to the baby to one of the most lyrically perfect songs possible.
I just hope... Was it Lars? He's the dickhead, right?
Lars, yeah. That'd be him.
Yeah, yep. I just hope he wasn't upset that the baby pulled focus from him. I'm sorry, I hate Metallica. Fuck him.
Well, I enjoy the music, but Lars in particular, some of the things that he has said in the past, specifically around like Napster and so forth, yeah, they're massive hypocrites.
Yeah, yeah. Ah, oh, it's too funny. I couldn't get a new pool.
Now, on a far more positive than that note,
I'm totally gonna cut in a bit of unlicensed Metallica there.
Yes, yes. We'll get copyright dinged on YouTube, but it's not like that's a first.
I'm stealing your song. There's nothing you can do about it.
Remember a while back, we talked about Daniel Day Kim was campaigning for James Hong to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Indeed.
Courtesy a recent story in the LA Times, it's finally happened.
Great success. I saw the photos. It looked like a wonderful event.
Oh, yeah. They had marching band, dancing dragons. Like, they, from what I've read, went all out for this thing. And yeah, it's goddamn David Lopan, so you're damn right you go all out.
Yeah, and the as much of the cast as possible of Big Trouble came out, and it's like, oh, it's so weird to see you guys super fucking old. Like, it makes sense to see James Hong old. We've been seeing him old for a long time, plus his character in that movie was, at times, super fucking old.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, yeah, okay. Everyone else? Oh, I don't like that. Stop aging, you assholes!
And I mean, this man is 93.
Stop aging, you assholes!
He is 93 and still making movies.
He's still got a good 36 films in him.
Oh, abso-fucking-lutely. And I mean, knowing that there's a remake of Big Trouble in Little China somewhere in the works.
Oh, dear.
If James Hong does not come back to do David Lopan, if they cast anyone else, fuck this movie. Like, I don't care how good it is. You don't put anyone else in that role. Now, I can't find the exact number in the article, but I have seen it mentioned. And this adds to the fact that this star should have been there a long time ago. Yeah, so far on the entire Walk of Fame, I believe the only performers of Asian descent are Anime Wong, Mako, because again, you're goddamn right. Mm-hmm. Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, and Lucy Liu. Less than 1% of the names represented among the stars on the Walk of Fame are Asian. And really?
Yeah, it's so... Hollywood and a lot of mainstream entertainment really, like mainstream Western entertainment, really sucks at raising up diverse cast. So you can have a diverse cast, but like this Asian character, you're never going to see this actor again. George Takei was incredibly lucky to land on something that had such cultural import,
yeah,
that he was able to have a career the rest of his life. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of other Japanese, Chinese, Korean, etc. actors in Hollywood and in America at the time who were working, who appeared on, you know, dramas, comedies, normal television, and you don't know who the fuck they are. You know, like, they're lost. And I feel like typically the entertainment industry has been a bit more abrupt at kind of just dropping Asian actors. Big Trouble in Little China is over 30 years old. That's absurd.
Yeah.
He should have been recognized then, and even then he had been working already. Like, you know, that there are so few is a testament to just the limited roles that have existed. Like, how many of those are action stars?
Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan, so...
Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan. What does Lucy Liu typically do? She did Charlie's Angels. That's what she's mostly known for. Ally McBeal, yes, that's a comedy, but Charlie's Angels, X versus Sever. She did, like, a couple of action crap like that. George Takei's not there though. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I was just gonna say he's not mentioned, and I can't help but sit here going, Lucy Liu got a star before George Takei. What?
It's really fascinating. She had a lot of cultural pull though. Like, she had cachet, and now she's been on Elementary for like a decade, which itself is kind of like sort of an adventure show. So she's been able to break the mold. Of course, Bruce Lee was an action star. Jackie Chan, action comedy. Mako was in a bunch of like kung fu crap, good and bad. Yeah. Can you click on or search Anime Wong? Because I'm going to assume that that is the silver screen age starlet. And she played a lot of femme fatales.
Yeah, it looks like you're right. A lot of her later credits are TV shows, like Mike Hammer, The Life and Legend of Wyatt Earp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and the movies that she did were like Asian Peril, Vixen, Femme Fatale.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was quite big, but she always played the same character. She played a villain for the most part. She was quite frustrated by that, if I recall. Two of them are action stars. One of them's Lucy Liu, who is a 90s kind of all aspects comedy, sex, action, adventure star. Very limited roles. You're not seeing consider Crazy Rich Asians as an incredibly popular film filled with tons of incredible Asian actors. All of those characters are like human, dramatic level, normal characters that you would find in kind of like a dramedy. And you don't see that in other films. It had to be made by that community. And so that's only now being corrected, and look for the next 10 to 20 years to be a lot of corrections in terms of the Walk of Fame. But yeah, I'm not surprised that they are so underrepresented.
Yeah. And I mean, also really, the almost ironic thing here is a lot of those corrections are probably in some fashion going to be the result of James Hong.
He works his ass off to represent and bring change, you know?
He works his ass off just in general as an actor. Like, again, his IMDb entry, you could probably just spend an hour, maybe 2 hours, just going through it and discovering things. In 1965, he was the co-founder of the East West Players, the first theater in the States committed to raising the visibility of the Asian American experience. So he's probably also launched a number of careers for Asian actors.
Oh yeah, and that's I remember reading at some point that it was kind of a great in joke that his villain character in Big Trouble in Little China is essentially an evil version of himself. Where it's like he's wormed his way into influence in everything, except in reality, James Hong's like a really nice guy who's just trying to help you and like his community. Whereas, you know, the villain was a murderous gangster, evil wizard.
Yeah, no, to be perfectly frank, if James Hong in reality is the nice version of Lo Pan, I need to meet James Hong. Like that sounds like a man that I just want to hang out with and like listen to him tell stories.
Oh yeah, no. Like if for nothing else than his incredible voice, but also, holy shit, that guy knows shit. He's seen shit.
Yeah. Like you could probably do an entire film convention where it's just him.
Hong Kong.
Yes.
We did it.
Someone with money, contact us. This needs to happen.
We did it.
There it is. Now, ET Canada has brought us random trivia that no one asked for, but is still mildly fascinating.
That's what they're best at.
Specifically, Lord of the Rings was apparently almost a family affair. As actor John Astin, both the original Gomez Adams and the adoptive father of Sean Astin, had apparently auditioned a couple of times, actually, for Gandalf.
Really? See, I can picture him as Gomez, you know, from the TV show. And, like, his nose and eyes work, but the rest of Gomez doesn't. And I always thought of him as a very small man, like, stature. He's a tiny guy. Morticia looms over him. And so, flipping that around, no, that breaks my brain a little bit. Also, I did not know they were related.
No, that I didn't either. But for me, it's more, I had seen him on, I think, 80s sitcoms like Night Court and so forth a few times, like later on in his career.
Yeah.
So it was a little easier to picture him a little older, but his career is so comedic based that I look at least the version of Gandalf that we know from Sir Ian McKellen's work, and I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it, and I've always felt that it's not that Ian McKellen couldn't have done it beforehand. He obviously could have. He's Ian McKellen. He brought the necessary Macbethian kind of Merlin-esque grandeur to it. and like a quiet wisdom. But without breaking in the audience with his Magneto, like taking this otherwise cartoon villain and turning him into a Shakespearean character and having that be damned entertaining and fantastic and threatening and everything, I don't know if even he could have done Gandalf without Magneto. And so I don't think our Gomez, our Aston, could have done it, because it's like part of the lightning in the bottle of Gandalf. I firmly believe, like, inside Ian McKellen's performance is the dignity of Magneto.
Yeah, I mean, and for my part, I think even without Magneto, I think McKellen could still do it.
Oh, yes.
Because, like, he would still be able to bring that certain gravitas, that just dramatic impact. But with John Astin, my image of him is more almost slapstick comedy-esque.
Mm.
And the two just don't mesh.
He'd make a all right Radagast.
Yeah, actually, yeah, now that you say that, yeah, I could see that more. But according to Astin himself, quote, "I tested for a few times for Gandalf. The last test I did, they gave me something out of the second book, and I studied it and came up with what I thought was a good interpretation of it, but it wasn't at all what Peter and Fran wanted." Fran being Fran Walsh, who he had previously. And interesting note here is the article says, before testing for the part, Gomez had already worked with director Peter Jackson and screenwriter producer Fran Walsh on their film The Frighteners. Pretty sure that should say Astin and not Gomez.
Yeah, first of all, yeah, I was curious who made the mistake there for a moment. It's just like, wait, no, I'm saying yeah. Gomez, because I can't remember Astin. You shouldn't be saying Gomez. Okay, it's in the article. That's fantastic. And number two, wait, who was he in Frighteners? Which one of the ghosts?
That I don't know. So we're going to run right back to IMDb for a second. And John Astin was the judge.
The judge. Okay. Wow. 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 No, I did not recognize him at all. Nope. Okay, thank you. That suddenly, like, a little piece falls into place, and it's like, oh, okay, ooh, neurons connecting, ooh.
Yeah. Astin went on to say, I knew them well enough to say, hey, let me try to work on it and come back again. They would have been receptive to that. But I thought about it, and Sean was trying to get into the film, too, and Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't want to spend about a year and a half on a horse, so I just let it be. I feel like that was more just him trying to be comedic and not say, well, they didn't want me for the part.
Yeah, yeah, my Gandalf was pantomime. I make no apologies. I make no apologies!
And also in the category of headlines I've been dying to read.
Ooh.
Movie about bear that ate a lot of cocaine gets release date.
Good. Good.
Cocaine Bear, which apparently actually is the title, good, is due out from Universal on February 24th, 2023. The only way that this could get better is if we could maybe just move that like a few weeks earlier, nice and close to February 9th, so that I could have this on my birthday.
Honestly, why is it so far away? I want it now.
Right?
I want it now.
And so the Elizabeth Banks movie, which, okay, if anyone's panicking about that after Charlie's Angels, I disagree, but I also don't really blame you. Stars Kerry Russell, Ray Liotta, Alden Ehrenreich, O'Shea Jackson, and Jesse Tyler Ferguson. So they've actually put together a half-decent cast list for this.
Fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say.
And then Bear and cocaine. Okay. I can see how that could come together. I can see how it could fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Cocaine Bear is based, at least in part, on a true story. Oh my God. Coming from a 1985 New York Times report about a 175-pound black bear that was found dead near the Tennessee-Georgia state line after apparently consuming over 70 pounds of cocaine.
Decent. That bear went out like a baller.
Per the New York Times, the bear had been dropped from a plane by a local drug smuggler. Okay. The smuggler, Andrew Thornton, also met a bad end in Nashville, Tennessee, after trying to carry too heavy a load while parachuting. The film is being described as a horror comedy and a thriller. And I literally want this more and more with every word I read.
Do you trick the bear out the door, or do you try to, like, push it? Do you hope it just runs out the plane? How the fuck do you get a bear out of a plane while flying?
Okay. I think somehow, some way, the parachute was put on the bear before the plane took off.
That's bad. That's a bad
idea. And then at some point during the flight, the smuggler panics. And you remember that moment in the Fast and the Furious where they're all parachuting their cars out of a plane and Roman won't do it, so they just automatically activate his chute?
Except it's a bear, the chute tears, the bear stands there in front of them growling and rips their face off.
It had to have been something like that. It had to.
Fuck. I can't wait for that film.
Oh, God. Me neither. This past weekend, the BBC announced the casting of actor Shuri Gatwa as the 14th Doctor.
And they did it in the most lackluster way. Oh, my God. That was the most piss-ass little announcement ever. Here is a front face shot of the actor after we tweet just like some random emojis.
Yeah.
And just say like, oh, by the way, this guy's the next Doctor. And it's like, there are Big Finish guests who have gotten more hoopla on their announcement. I passed the announcement a few times, not knowing what it was, because all I saw was some guy staring dead center down the camera in a gray background. Nothing about it said Doctor Who. What the hell was that? I wish him all the luck, and I can't wait because I hear that he's fantastic, but, like, how about some fucking fireworks for the new Doctor? Jeez.
Oh, no, I completely agree. I gave my initial reaction on my TikTok account talking about how, amongst other things, slowly but surely, the announcements do generally become less and less. Like, Peter Capaldi, for his announcement, had gotten, like, an hour-long sit-down interview special. Jodie Whittaker, for her announcement, got that something like 3 to 5 minute video that was posted on social media. And then Shuri Gatwa just gets a picture.
Yeah, Matt Smith got, like, an entire month of press lead up and who's it going to be? Will it, won't they? Oh my God. Oh my God. Like that was a massive event. And this is just like, oh, and, I don't know. This guy, fuck it. Bye. It's like, woof.
Oh,
how about
I a little love? Agree.
Jesus.
Yeah. Oh no, I totally agree. I do also have a potential explanation. And also, everybody keep in mind that this is just rumor. I have not confirmed this in any way. But I have heard that it may be a case of the BBC knew that a leak was coming. So they tried to just, they basically just put something out as fast as they could so that they were at least the ones initially announcing it.
And that is entirely fair. I don't have a problem necessarily with the speed of it. It's more like the lack of finesse whatsoever. You can do stuff fast and still have at least something better than what they had. What they had was literally just like a headshot from his resume. Yeah. Here is an actor's headshot. Another account, like a fan account, quickly replaced it, like, tweeted out their own version of the announcement, and it had this beautiful backdrop of the TARDIS, and it said, you know, Doctor Who, the 14th Doctor announcement, and it had this great photo of him looking excited to be a part of this, you know, like laughing and like happy about this announcement, not dead center pan looking down the camera. And under that, it said, you know, like, it had the whatever the hell else deal of the announcement was. Maybe up top it was Doctor Who, down below it's 14th Doctor, his name. That was probably photoshopped in 5 minutes. It doesn't take much to have like the bare minimum, and it looked good. It looked professional. You're the goddamn BBC. Go into your little grab bag of IP controlled sound effects that you have and like backgrounds and moving shit and like just throw something together that has a little bit of finesse to it that isn't just here is essentially his mugshot as an actor. Good day.
Yeah, and like in my case it was literally I woke up Saturday morning, went on Twitter. And I get that with the BAFTAs coming up and what was going to be there was probably going to be peppered with questions from the press and all that. So they had to get something out as fast as possible, which fine. But for me, it's still just a general disappointment.
Mm.
Not with the actor in any way.
With the way it was announced.
With the fact that it was done at all, because I am a Doctor Who fan who has never been able to properly experience a regeneration because the actors are always announced so far ahead.
That's fair. I can say I experienced the David Tennant, like, regeneration when he became David Tennant, because I didn't know who the fuck David Tennant was.
Mm.
So that was fun. It's like, oh, he's kind of chinless now. Isn't that interesting? He looks like a bird.
in my case, when I had started watching, it was literally right when Matt Smith was being announced.
Ah.
So and I completely missed out.
Could not ever possibly miss that one. Boy, did they go hard on that.
At the same time, though, like you, I had never heard of him beforehand and literally had no idea how to even pronounce his name. But then James, our graphics guy, sent me a YouTube clip of kind of an interview segment that he was doing with one of his Sex Education co-stars.
Mm.
And as he's introducing himself, I could see this kind of childlike enthusiasm. And I'm sitting there like, That's how you got the role, right there.
Yeah, he has a whimsy, an enthusiasm, and a mischievousness to him.
And there was also a clip from Sex Education going around. It's kind of akin to the Matt Smith suit sequence in Morbius.
Mm.
It's Gatwa putting on makeup and picking out clothes to this, I think, techno song whose lyrics are so beautifully risque that even with our explicit warning, I don't know if we could put them into this audio. But people were kind of sending it around as, in both a positive and a negative sense, kind of a joke, hey, look at your 14th doctor. And I'm sitting here going, I'm sorry, there is such a fearlessness in this entire clip that I would absolutely want this man to play the doctor.
Nails, hair, hips, heels, face done, lips real, purse full, big bills. Yes, I'm a big deal. Legs, legs, face, eyes, thin, waist, thick.
And moving on, the other big release slash announcement, whatever you want to call it, was of course the trailer for Avatar 2, which came out in front of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It looks wonderful.
It looks good.
I saw it in 3D, and the 3D looked smooth as could be.
Mm.
Absolutely top-notch. It's the same absolutely top-notch as the first Avatar.
Yeah, I still don't care about it. It looks very pretty. Yes, that is the best graphics I have ever seen. Wow.
Yeah.
Look at those water effects. So dynamic. So fantastic. It looks real. It looks like Unreal Engine 5 times a million. It's beautiful. I don't give a fuck about the planet Pandora or any of the characters on it or anyone in this movie. Please take these effects and make another movie so that we can enjoy another movie, something better, with these incredible effects. Make, as I've said before, give this man a theme park. Let him design an entire AR, like immersive reality experience with these graphics, because they are amazing. I can completely understand why he has spent so much time working on them. It's gorgeous, and as everyone has, of course, been pointing out who is over the age of 30. James Cameron has done this before. He does something big, and everyone goes, my God, he's the king of Hollywood. And he just ebbs away, and years go by, and you go, what the fuck happened to James Cameron? And it's like, I don't know, he's coming up with some stupid fucking weird crazy idea. He's built the Titanic. Yeah, that's gonna fail. No one's gonna watch that movie. And then it kicks shit out of the box office and wins all the awards. And it's like, it's gonna happen again. You know it's gonna happen again. He's going to make all of the money with this, and it's going to win a ton of awards, and everyone's gonna see it, and it might even break the stranglehold that Marvel has on the box office, which is funny because it's just Disney passing that stranglehold from one hand to another. It's like giving it a rest or something.
Oh, but, true. And
yeah.
Also with the, I believe there's an upcoming re-release of the first Avatar, which is, let's be like, I feel like that's nothing more than Disney trying to trade the top box office of all time spot between Avatar and Endgame.
Yeah. When did Avatar come out? Was that 2009?
I'm not sure, but I think it's somewhere between 2009 and... Oh, yeah, you're right. It's 2009.
Of course. So it's been 13 years. That's roughly as much time from, like, between 1999 and the release of Star Wars, just to like try to consider how like long it's been since a sequel and interest. That's enough for like kids who were wondered by it are now surly teenagers. I don't know. There's something about this movie. It just gives me the same heebie-jeebies that I have looking at pyramid schemes. I don't like this. I don't like what it does to audiences.
Oh, no. Frankly, I don't blame you. And a lot of people have been trying to use the view numbers for the trailer. It's so far collected over 148 million views, which on the one hand is a great number, but every time somebody tries to use that to go, no, see, people really do care, that the interest is there, I'm sitting here thinking, it's the very first trailer for an upcoming blockbuster franchise film.
Yeah, that we haven't heard a peep about, really, in 13 years. Of course everyone's going to want to see. You want to see if it looks different. You want to see if something has completely changed or if it's the same thing. And it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing, just with better graphics.
And I mean, quite simply, can you name me one blockbuster film whose first trailer was not breaking view number records?
Yeah, it's part of how they design these things. Literally, it's when you're putting together sequences in them, you're doing so thinking, okay, so what will look good in the kind of trailer that we would like? Something that will grab eyes.
Yeah. And then also there's a simple fact that apparently it got that beautiful roughly 150 million views. F9 is still laughing at it with its over 200 million views for its first trailer. So it's not really that big of a deal.
Yeah, that is like, that's embarrassing for Avatar.
Yeah.
Considering that there is nothing new in F9. Nothing. There's only repetition par excellence, and which is exactly what Avatar is. And so it's like, yeah, it would be fascinating if this was the first James Cameron failure. I'm going to say failure relatively, because I still suspect this is going to make back its bank with like the average audience member who wants to have a rush. But just like the first one, I hope it disappears from consciousness quickly. I don't care for Avatar.
I feel like it's one of those, it's gonna peak. I think it'll do good numbers because of course it will. Will it do the numbers that people are assuming that it's going to do? I would not bet on that. From slashfilm.com, anyone who is on my Facebook knows I'm starting to have issues with, has an article with the headline, "Why Director Nicholas Stoller Being Straight Was Key to Making Bros Work, According to Billy Eichner." Now, Bros, specifically, is a new comedy that Eichner, I believe, wrote and is starring in. And Eichner, according to the article, is now the first openly gay man to co-write and star in a major studio film. And Bros is the first major studio film to feature an all openly LGBTQ+ principal cast, including in the roles of straight characters. There is so much queerness apparently in this movie that Nicholas Stoller is literally the only straight element. And apparently, According to Eichner himself, Stoller was, in his words, the perfect person to direct Bros, in a large part because the idea of the gay rom-com was entirely Stoller's, but Stoller knew he needed to bring a gay person on board to make it.
Okay, so yeah, that's interesting that he's the one who brought the idea in, and that's, he's kind of like helming it through, and they're helping him. Okay, I'll be interested to see it.
Yeah, it's intriguing because it kind of sounds like very much a strike director who's doing allyship as rightly as you can do it.
As possible, yeah, exactly. He's doing everything he can while still having a job.
And from there, we're going to go on to Dune for a bit. First and foremost, from a few weeks back, there's a prequel series called Dune: The Sisterhood, which is basically a series about the Harkonnen sisters as they fight to protect humanity and end up creating the mysterious group of superhuman women known as the Bene Gesserit.
Bene Gesserit.
Thank you.
Their Dune's my shit.
Well, then that would probably make you the perfect person to ask this. Is there enough in Dune to create essentially a cinematic universe around it?
To begin with, Frank Herbert's Dune alone takes place over 30,000 years, maybe 60,000 years. Yes, there is enough. On top of that, his son went ahead and wrote volumes and volumes of prequels that will not be touched upon because there are two camps of Dune. There's Frank Herbert Dune and his son, and there are actually canon differences, and almost everyone agrees we ignore Frank Herbert's son. His son doesn't know shit. We only pay attention to Frank Herbert. Though, if you ever feel like picking up more Dune than what Frank wrote, do give the other books a shot. They have books that like focus on the history of the families. They have one on the Butlerian Jihad is why there's no AI in the universe. There is so goddamn much Dune. There is so much Dune that Frank Herbert died before finishing Dune. There is more Dune than we actually got. So yes.
Nice. Excellent. Well, I just wanted to ask because as someone who only knows Dune from the films, and you have the early 80s film where people fall into one of three categories. You like the movie, you fell asleep while repeatedly watching the movie, or you're someone like me who liked the movie but has fallen asleep several times during viewings.
Yes. That's literally everyone. I adore that chaotic mess, but there is at least three great times in it when you can take fantastic cat naps. Like, perfect. I don't know how many times I've woken up to him at the end screaming that the sleeper has awoken. Like, every time. Wait, what's going on? Oh, shit. I missed the movie again.
Whereas I, at least twice, have sat down and watched it, got about two-thirds of the way through, and then I was out for the night.
Well, that's the good thing about the new one. There's so much Zendaya, you never nod off, because there might be more Zendaya. Ooh, more Zendaya.
Oh, very true. The new one, I actually group with both Blade Runners in that if it is ever playing in the theater for any reason, I will be there.
And considering Blade Runner, how that sequel was done, there were a couple of proto-sequels or like prequel sequels or something like that. There were many episodes surrounding that Blade Runner film, and they helped flesh out more of the universe and the changes that had occurred since the first film. And I was very excited that we might get some of that, and then annoyed that we didn't, and then I forgot about it. So, the idea that we are actually getting some of that, and it's focusing on the origin of the Bene Gesserit, so that is like 10,000 years in the past. That's going to be fascinating. That means it's not going to be anywhere near as interesting looking. It's going to be like semi-near future. Couple hundred years from now, maybe a thousand, which is like, that's cheap. That's Caprica cheap. But I still have hope.
Oh, totally fair. And I would also like to note for our listeners that I wish you could have seen Crash's face when I asked the question. Because you would have understood the true glory that I immediately knew was coming.
Vomit of information.
Now, also speaking of the cinematic Dune, specifically Dune Part 2, have you heard the casting news regarding the Emperor?
Oh, I'm so happy. It doesn't line up with the books, but I don't give a fuck. I don't care. Considering the aesthetics that this movie has gone for and how they portrayed the Baron Harkonnen, I am super excited to see where this goes.
Oh, as am I, because I literally discovered on the bus on my way home before we recorded that cast as the Emperor is Christopher Motherfucking Walken. As if I was not excited before.
Shadam. You don't get that joke.
No.
That's a Dune joke. Ah.
Okay. And well, I didn't get it, and I was also kind of half listening in that moment because I was trying to track down a particular old Christopher Walken movie, specifically 2012's Stand Up Guys, which was Walken and was it Al Pacino? Yeah, Walken and Al Pacino as these old school mobsters who were like toward the end of their careers. The movie itself is really a nothing movie.
Mm.
But Walken and Pacino as Doc and Val respectively are give performances and create characters where, as I mentioned with James Hong earlier, this is another, I just want to sit like under a tree or on a nice grassy hill somewhere and just listen to you talk. Just tell me stories, please.
Yeah, I'm so happy you said that movie and not the one about ping pong.
No, you're pretty safe on that one because I'm not even entirely sure what that movie is, and I probably want to keep it that way.
What? No.
Uh-oh.
No. In the style of Dodgeball, more or less actually ripping off Dodgeball, but combining it with 70s martial arts cliches. A fat American ping pong master has to compete in a mortal combat tournament of ping pong, lorded over by the evil warlord played by Christopher Walken in full, like, Ming the Merciless Yellow Peril getup.
I haven't actually seen it, but I definitely know of it because, man, is this sounding familiar.
I absolutely suggest you watch it. It is terrible garbage comedy that gives you a performance from Walken that is just, well, golly goddamn. I wasn't expecting to ever see that in my life. Okay. And so comparing that performance, which at some point you will see, to Shaddam, yeah, is going to be really fantastic because no way in hell are they going to cross over whatsoever. It's going to be menacing as fuck. Like, consider the characterization of Max Schreck from Batman Returns and his headless horseman from Sleepy Hollow with a gangster, and then you get the conniving, spineless bastard that would be the emperor of this crappy, crappy galaxy. It's going to be fantastic. He's going to be so, like, faux-threatening. I can't wait. I want to spoil everything.
To be perfectly honest, you had me sold as soon as you said Max Schreck.
Yeah! Super Max Schrecky. Yeah, very Max Schrecky. But imagine if Max Schreck, instead of, like, trying to get the Penguin to do something, was conniving with the Kingpin.
Okay, yeah, I'm definitely intrigued by this.
Yeah, that's the Emperor and the Baron Harkonnen. That's their relationship.
Nice. I mean, I was excited by this just because it was Christopher Walken, but... Yeah,
go watch, like, some Dune. Go watch some Dune.
In a bit of a scandal news, and under the I did not expect to read that category. The Wonder Years had to fire an executive producer slash director following an investigation into inappropriate conduct.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to love this part.
Oh, I know this part.
Oh, yeah. The person in question was Fred Savage.
Yeah, and to anyone who knows anything about Fred Savage, this is not the first time. And not even the first time on the set of The Wonder Years, and not just this Wonder Years.
No, yeah, I was going to say there's... I got this off a Deadline article, and as you go through it, it's like, wow.
Yep. Yep, it turns out he's a dickhead.
Oh, yeah. Amongst other things, in 2018, the Wonder Years actress Ally Mills came forward with claims that the cancellation of the original series followed a completely ridiculous sexual harassment suit filed by a costumer against Savage, and who at the time was 16. So there's just its own level of creepiness just in that one fact.
Yep.
Which Mills, who played Savage and Hervey's mother on the show, said was settled out of court. The same year, a crew member on Savage's Fox series, The Grinder, filed a lawsuit accusing the actor of attacking and harassing her on the set of the series in 2015. Now, Savage's response at the time was to call the allegations completely without merit and absolutely untrue, which I'm pretty sure is the catchphrase of anyone at the center of a scandal.
Yep.
Yeah, it's one of those, you see the headline and you're like, okay, the Wonder Years has had to fire the guy at the center of the original Wonder Years.
Mm-hmm.
And then you read the article and it's like, yeah, he had to go.
Yeah, and that's how you know it's true. Like, when they burn the main star and, like, executive producer, it's like, oh, he's a complete prick and everything said about him is probably true. And I'm just happy that, considering how much of a dickhead he apparently is, we can all go back to forgetting that Fred Savage ever existed.
Yeah, especially since I don't think Mike Myers is going to have another movie to bring him back in.
No, his Netflix one tanked like shit. Oh my god. It's the first Shrek movie to fail.
Yeah, I was literally just going to ask, is that the one where it's Mike Myers meeting Shrek? Amongst
other
things?
Yeah, so there's a live-action Shrek who appears and, like, saves the day, but it's a weird Shrek costume that, like, its mouth doesn't move or anything. It looks like an amusement park Shrek. It total failure, absolute abysmal failure. I haven't watched it yet, but it is just going.
Yeah, I haven't watched it either, but I just had that clip randomly appear on my Facebook page, and I was just like, "Oh no!"
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now. For anyone who's been following this show for a particularly extended period of time, you know I love schlock. You know I love bad movies. And I'm still going, oh, no.
Yeah, there's a bad movie and then there's a bad movie.
Now we finally come to Dave Chappelle being attacked on stage during the Netflix is a Joke show at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yep. A clusterfuck of stupidity. Every detail of this is more nauseatingly bizarre than the last. By all means, proceed.
So, Chappelle was doing his set. He got, I think, about two-thirds of the way through when a man who was identified as 23-year-old Isaiah Lee ran up and tackled him to the floor. And so people rush out to help, most notably Jamie Foxx, members of Chappelle's security, not event security, Chappelle's security, all jump in, grab the guy, take him to the back, beat the shit out of him to the point that he had to go to the hospital. I'm kind of curious if he's going to press charges against Chappelle security now. And then Chris Rock comes out pretty much specifically to grab a mic and go, was that Will Smith? Because a guy who is looking to get paid to tell his story about that incident needs to keep it in the headlines just a little bit longer. And so the LAPD, of course, arrested him and noted he was carrying essentially a fake gun that could discharge a knife blade.
Knife gun! So,
like, I don't know what it is, but I know that there's a joke about bringing a knife to a gunfight in there somewhere.
Like, when I wished upon a falling star that Dave Chappelle would be attacked by a knife gun, I appreciate the specificity being taken into account. I know now that I should have been more clear about the outcome and the size of the sword gun.
Now, I would also note that Crash and I both, interestingly enough, have pretty much the same issues with Chappelle, but for entirely different reasons.
He's such a dink.
In my case, I find so much of his recent comedy so just lazy that alone is offensive as hell.
And in my case, he disagrees with my existence.
Precisely. And
of equal and valid weight.
No, yours has way more than mine does.
Well, that's nice to hear.
But the simple fact that from this attack, Chappelle clearly learned nothing, because he came back out on stage to imply that his attacker was a trans man, which, for the record, no, he wasn't. Nope.
Yeah, and no one was surprised by that whatsoever. It's just, yep, you had to be a douche. You had one moment of sympathy,
yep,
and you, as usual, you destroyed it as quickly as possible. Congratulations. Keep being such an asshole, because apparently it's all you're capable of anymore.
And also, of course, people took this story to go, see what Will Smith started?
Which is like, oh, that's fucking bullshit. This guy didn't attack Dave Chappelle because of Will Smith. That's stupid as crap. People just, like, at this point, like I said months ago, or like I said weeks ago, people are using it as an excuse to leap on Will Smith because he's finally vulnerable. And
yep.
Now that that's passed, some people just keep trying it. And like, you're trying to reignite it. And it's like, oh, fuck off. This would have happened no matter what. This had nothing to do with Will Smith at all. This has everything to do with the attacker's likely very warped sense of reality and parasocial relationship with Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for me hearing those comments, I'm just sitting here as a pro wrestling fan and going, no, Crazy has been attacking the stage for decades.
Yeah, Crazy attacks stage. It's just what you gotta do. I mean, Dimebag Daryl went down for this shit. And it happened before, it happened again.
Quite simply, when you are a stage performer or in the public eye in that capacity, it kills me that I'm going to say this, but it comes with the territory.
Yeah. Also, quite frankly, you know, like, as a student of history, I just want to say, on behalf of John Wilkes Booth, I am offended. He leapt onto a stage from the balcony after shooting the president in the back of the head, broke his leg, shouted his line, and then made an escape. That is commitment to disruptive behavior. You don't get to give that to some lesser actor later on. Show some respect for America's greatest Brutus. And by that, I mean his performance. He was amazing in Julius Caesar. That's how he got his line right. Probably even hit his same mark. Broke his leg to hit the mark. I got it. Yeah.
Of course, Howard Stern had his reaction, which Howard, all I'm going to say is misdemeanor battery and assault with a deadly weapon are not the same thing and do not merit the same responses.
No.
And also, Kevin Hart was on the Jimmy Kimmel Live show with guest host Mike Birbiglia. And of course the incident came up, because why wouldn't it? And as Birbiglia was calling the moment scary, which as a performer I could see where he's coming from, Hart said, quote, "Somebody getting their ass whooped, not scary. It's one of those things that need to happen, though. It sends a message to other people, you know? I was thinking about doing that, but after seeing that, I don't really want to do that." It's sad that mob justice is apparently what we need for a deterrent now. Hart went on to say, and for anyone wondering, this is from ET Canada, quote, "I think that the world that we're in right now, there's a lot of lines that have gotten blurred. And sometimes you got to take a couple steps backwards to take some steps forwards. I think that moment that we just witnessed with Dave is like fogging up a bigger moment. Which I don't know what he's referring to by this bigger moment.
Yeah, I think he's fogging up a bigger moment by turning this into more than just like some guy attacking Dave Chappelle on stage. It has nothing to do with the moment, Kevin Hart.
Yeah. And I'm wondering where he also mentions how Dave went back on and finished the show. And he didn't make a big thing of this guy jumping him. Which I'm going to again go back to pro wrestling, where the wrestlers are literally taught from day one exactly how to do that. It's not that big a thing.
Yeah, I know. It's at this point, everyone in comedy wants to get behind him because his comedy is fantastic. He's great. He's got connections. He's an excellent voice for his community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Problem is, he's also a bit of an old fogey douchebag bigot. It comes through in a couple of ways. And so, yeah, I could see him kind of stammering around that because there's, ultimately, it's like, a bad thing happened to a guy who's not that bad, probably didn't deserve it, but he's still a jackass.
Yeah.
And it's just, everyone survived, that's good. The attacker got brutalized, and that'll probably lead to at least a lawsuit. But overall, I just mostly look forward to ignoring Dave Chappelle talk about this for years to come.
Yeah, and look, for me, where the last thing Kevin Hart says is, I think it's time to get back to a place of respect for your live entertainer, which is fine, but when more often than not, that live entertainer is going on stage and saying things to try to provoke people, because I'm sorry, Dave Chappelle has at least one recent Netflix special whose sole purpose seems to have been to provoke an entire community as much as he possibly could.
Yeah. And yeah, I just don't find him worth being provoked by. He's really old and out of touch, and it's just, okay, cool. You know, I once went to a live Bill Cosby show. Probably 15 years ago, maybe a bit more. You know, it was before, like, he got in shit and got sent to jail. And it was about an hour and a half, 2 hours of him sitting on a recliner in the middle of the stage, just, like, complaining about the youth. And the entire audience, I swear, it was, like, maybe me and a couple of other people were under the age of, honestly, like, under the age of 30 to start with, but, like, there was a wide gap there, and then you hit, like, 60 and 70 and 80. And I learned then and there that old comedians talk a lot of boring shit, and it doesn't matter. None of it mattered. And when it comes to Dave Chappelle, it doesn't matter either. He's really quite boring, and if anyone finds his stuff innovative at this point, they're probably not who you're turning to get your ideas.
No, I mean, like, once upon a time, his stuff was innovative, and there have been plenty of older comedians who could go up on stage at, like, 70 or whatever and give you material that was absolutely timeless.
Sure, but they challenge themselves. They've had to challenge themselves. Yeah. He hasn't had to challenge himself in 20 years.
That's pretty much exactly what I was about to say, because from what I'm seeing from the prominent comedians of today, we're more and more getting to that point where that era of that timeless content is just gone.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been Real Geeks Presents The B-Roll. I have been Crash and Burn. He has been Mike Montgomery. If you enjoyed this, please like, share, and subscribe. And if you have anything to tell us, either leave a comment on the video or send us an email. What's our email address?
Well, you can reach us on realgeekshfx@gmail.com or on Twitter at realgeekshfx. And also, please leave us a rating on your favorite podcatcher. If you're on Apple Podcasts, a rating and a review. I believe Spotify also has ratings, reviews. I'm not sure. But in any case, the more we get, the more that helps the show, and we can continue to make the better content, maybe get some sponsors, and then we can make even better content. It's a whole chain where everyone wins.
Especially once we start getting money. Give us money.
Yeah, please, I need money.
Give us money! Thank you very much for listening. See you on Monday or Tuesday. What are we watching this week anyway?
Well, frankly, there wasn't a whole lot in terms of new releases, but I kept seeing the poster for the new Firestarter remake at Park Lane, and got curious. So we're going to be doing essentially a double review with the new Firestarter and the original Drew Barrymore nearly destroying Firestarter.
Ooh, I can't wait to see both disappointments. Goodbye, everybody!
See ya!